Federal pressure on the military academy in the 1820s to produce more engineers met with opposition from the academy staff. The faculty, backed by the chief of engineers, refused to lower its standards to produce more engineers without increasing its cadet body. Despite proposals to expand the Corps, the Congressional Committee on Military Affairs was unable to find ways and means to increase the number of either military or topographical engineers or to create higher academy output. The faculty found an expedient by shifting emphasis within the curriculum to civil engineering, ensuring that all graduates had some capability in this field. A second expedient was the employment of more and more infantry and artillery graduates in surveying. By 1826, 32 line officers were assigned to work alongside the 20 engineers and topog officers of the Internal Improvements Board. This practice continued until 1838, when an expanded corps of topog engineers took over such duties. Between 1824 and 1837, topogs completed 107 works of internal improvement authorized by Congress, disbursing $14,430,614. They also completed 263 surveys and examinations and published 776 drawings. Military historians have failed to see the connection between the work of the Army in meeting public demand for surveying and civil engineering and the policy for national defense, a connection that explains why the Academy expanded its military science to include fields of study needed for the Army's work in internal improvements. Some, following Huntington's thesis, see civil engineering as something that diverted the Army's energy away from the higher need to prepare for war. However, these opinions ignore the consistent and evident sentiment in the War Department throughout the 1820s and 1830s. In an era when states' rights and sectionalism were emerging as powerful forces to limit federal activities, and when civil demand for improvements steadily grew, the War Department continued to see the nation as a single whole, requiring an integrated defense policy that precluded the need for a large standing army. The department refused to dilute power by allocating tasks to states' militias. Instead, they continued to use the Army as an agent to promote integration within a defense policy that saw the nation as contained within military frontiers, requiring improved networks of communication internal to these frontiers for both military and civil purposes, all part of a single strategic problem requiring an engineering solution. Besides, all officers involved in such meaningful activity develop professionally. Internal improvements forced officers to represent federal interests when working beside state and business leaders to secure procurement, transportation, and construction contracts, providing them with wonderful experience that would serve them well in generating and supplying state volunteer armies for war. When graduates performed internal improvements duties, they acquired higher skill and knowledge of reconnaissance work and logistics. These were precisely the skills that in times of war would allow them to function more easily as commanders and general staff officers. Of the 1,966 graduates of the Academy between 1802 and June 1861, 326 were employed under the Fortifications Board or under the Internal Improvements Board, performing third system or internal improvements engineering duties. Of these 326, 189 were infantry, artillery, or cavalry officers borrowed from line units. The heaviest period of demand for seconded officers was between 1818 and 1838. One quarter, 180, of the 708 Academy graduates of this period were employed in such work. The personal and professional benefits of this service have not been recognized in the historiography. This work allowed officers the opportunity to apply the military science they had learned at West Point and to hone professional skills.